1039 LI News Radio. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and listen live 24/7 at linewsradio.com.
All right, it is time to turn our attention to the national front. And it is indeed a part of another Spotlight segment on Long Island with David Birdsell comes into play. He from the Austin W. Mark School of Public and International Affairs, talking about the great Baruch College. And always great to talk with him. David, how are you, sir? And we thank you, by the way, for shifting a tad from yesterday to today. We thank you for that, sir.
Well, it's a pleasure, and a pleasure to be here this morning.
Great to have you. Lots happening, David. I'll tell you, this whole Steve King thing is has just gotten out of hand. I say cut bait already. I mean, the remarks, supremacy and white supremacy and everything else, you know, shades of Megyn Kelly here, you know, time to cut bait and everything else. I'm sorry. You can't make, you got to have some sort of a filter. I can't understand that some of these individuals, Steve King to me, getting plenty and rightfully so, at least in my opinion.
Well, absolutely. He's been removed from his committee posts. Many people think that the caucus, the Republican caucus, should expel him completely. We don't have the power. The Congress does not have the power. At least Democrats don't have the power to remove him unilaterally. But he's expressive of a particularly nasty strand in American politics. Some portions of that strand are very tightly allied with the core voters and core Trump supporters in the party right now. So there's some delicacy involved, but at the very least, leadership has made plain that he's not welcome in leadership roles within the party at this point.
No question. And quite frankly, I liked what Kevin McCarthy said yesterday. I know he told many that they had voted unanimously, the GOP at least, to remove King from all committees, as you said, amid the rising uproar over his recent comments again about white nationalism. So, quite frankly, it had to be put in play. We talk about this shutdown, David, fourth week now, and it's the longest in history, we know. And the president, you know, firm on the ground, stating yesterday, a quote, never ever back down. Unquote, and rejected a suggestion from Lindsey Graham that he reopen the government for some, 3 weeks while negotiations with the Democrats would continue on the demand for the wall. But, you wonder here, this back and forth and everything else, you just wonder who's going to blink first here. I don't know, to be honest with you.
Well, before we get to blinking, and something that we're already seeing unfolding all across the United States, is not only the missing paychecks for the furloughed workers and those other workers, a slightly larger number, but 420,000 federal workers right now are deemed essential, people like air traffic controllers, transit security agents, and others who are working but are not getting paid. And then there are about 380,000 who are furloughed, staying home and not getting paid. And we focused on the pain that they and their families are feeling right now. But there are a whole raft of government services, from payments to farmers to issuing small business loans to right now protection on SNAP benefits, what used to be called food stamps, guaranteed, but only guaranteed right now through the end of February. There are a whole host of things that government does on a daily basis that are beginning to fall short. And if you look into farm country right now, that's particularly painful because not only are farmers bearing the brunt of the president's tariffs, but now they're not getting the payments that they were promised in lieu of the revenue that they would have reaped from selling soybeans to China and the loss of market for other tariffed goods. And one of the real questions is how much longer does Trump country stand behind the shutdown while they are disproportionately right now suffering its effects? I have to think ultimately that the president blinks first, but it's really hard to say. And I predicate that to a certain extent on the large majority of Americans, not necessarily Trump-based Republicans, who strongly support him on this, but the large majority of Americans who believe that the president is uniquely responsible for the shutdown.
No question. And listen, I'm concerned about TSA in particular. David, an incident over at the Atlanta airport with somebody carrying a firearm. on his way overseas. You know, it seems to be there's a lack thereof as far as security. We can't afford that. We have not lessons been learned here. TSA to me is primed and you know, number one category as far as the effects of all this stuff. Safety is coming into play in a big way here, and I think, you know, listen, I understand the sides and what we're doing here, but quite frankly, when people's lives are at risk or could be, that's when I draw the line.
Well, absolutely. And if we start thinking about how this ramifies into inconvenience and worse for not only hundreds of thousands, but potentially millions of Americans. You mentioned the incident where a gentleman was able to board a plane to Japan with a firearm in his luggage. There was also a case yesterday, the entire Terminal B at Bush International Airport, Texas, was shut down because they didn't have screeners to run the baggage checks and carry-on luggage checks going into the secure area of the airport. And that could happen at airports all over the United States. TSA agents do hard work. They're not lavishly compensated, to be sure, as it stands. But to have them expected to go to work for no money, their union is strongly considering a lawsuit and perhaps an action. But it's not possible to force them to come to work when they don't have any pay to pack up that presence on the job. And that does put all of us at risk. And if there are more shutdowns like the Bush Terminal B shutdown yesterday, we could bring air traffic into a point of chaos, if not a screeching halt very soon.
Thus, do you think a national emergency will be declared by the president at some point in time here?
Well, it's certainly possible. That is one route beyond this. It's laced through with its own problems. Many people believe that would be executive overreach. The Congress constitutionally has the power to allocate money and for what purposes that money will be spent. And right now, the Congress has been clear that all of the border security bills approved during the Trump administration do not include money for a wall. So his notion is that he would repurpose money from other places. He had actually suggested just last week that he would repurpose a little bit more than $11 billion from disaster relief that was intended for the residents of Texas in the wake of Hurricane Harvey, that was intended for the residents of Puerto Rico in the wake of Hurricane Maria, and so on. And, you know, that's sort of a double slap. That money is specifically allocated for a purpose, for the purposes of disaster relief and rebuilding in particular areas. And so you would have all of those folks in Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico unable to tap those funds, while at the same time abrogating in very explicit terms the will of the Congress. So it may provide a way to reopen the government and get a continuing resolution. We don't dare hope for a real budget bill, but get some funding for the federal government going forward, and then it would be a court contest over the president's ability actually to shift funds in the way that he wants to do.
Dr. David Birdsall with us. You know, it's interesting, David. The president denied firmly yesterday that he'd ever worked for Russia against U.S. interests. Did respond to a Times report, remember, Friday, that the FBI opened up a counterintelligence investigation into whether Trump was working to advance Russia's interests after he fired former FBI Director James Comey in May of 2017. So I guess when Trump was asked about the report during a Fox interview Saturday, it was noted that he didn't directly answer no, saying instead that the question, what did he call it, insulting. But then he flatly denied it yesterday. He told reporters he never worked for Russia and also defended the firing of Comey. And again, he attacked the probe. You know, he called it a whole big fat hoax or thereabouts. So, you know, I mean, listen, the hits keep coming with this whole, I mean, what's next? What is next here as far as the allegations against the president? I mean, it's getting to the point of comical proportions here.
Comical, tragic, or terrifying, depending on what time of day it is. I think that there has to be a point reasonably soon where the special counsel will need to step forward with some kind of report. The president's nominee to become attorney general has shared his sense because many members of the Congress were concerned that he would simply stifle the Mueller report, that report must be completed and it must be shared with the public in order to clear the air if the president's supporters are correct and there's nothing there, to reassure people that that's the case, or if there is something to be very concerned about, that we take appropriate action, which may involve removal of the president or may involve, depending on what the schedule of release is, an almost immediately ensuing election that would allow the people to lend their own voice to the disposition of the president's possible second term and certainly the end of his first. So that's really where we are. We have to see what the evidence looks like. We have so much circumstantial evidence right now, from the Deutsche Bank payments to the Trump Organization to both Eric Trump and Donald Trump Jr.'s statements about the importance of Russian money to their business operations going back to 2008 and 2013, well before candidate Trump declared his intentions in 2015. We have the demonstrably Russia-friendly, if not directly Russia-linked, policy positions taken by the president, everything from undoing climate accords to undoing NATO itself. It's a remarkable, and we have the more than 100 contacts proven and now admitted by the Trump campaign and the Trump administration, and consistently covered up until they are forced through public documentation to admit the contact between members of the Trump administration and their campaign and Russian operatives from 2016 on. So there's a tremendous amount of circumstantial evidence out there, and we're moving, in my view, rapidly to the point where we have to have some public accounting one way or the other. What did these things constitute, and what is it ultimately that Mr. Mueller knows that we don't? We know there's a lot there, but we don't know what it is, and we don't know whether it's exculpatory or damning.
And, you know, listen, I think you hit it in the beginning of your comment, David. I think Mueller's got to come through here with something now. I mean, the back and forth, the merry-go-round continuing of all these, you know, allegations and everything else. Listen, I think the American people are getting tired of it. They want something set in stone. He's had a long time to delve into this. And listen, I understand these investigations take time and everything else. We've seen it. But enough is enough. I mean, we need something definitive from Robert Mueller, as far as I'm concerned, regarding this whole thing. I think we need something, and it has to come within the next couple of months. You can't keep going on and on, twists and turns, keeping people twisting in the wind. The president at the forefront of everything. I think something has to be said from Robert Mueller at this point in time.
Well, it's getting increasingly difficult to imagine how we proceed without that definitive information. Whether or not the investigation is at a point that he feels comfortable moving forward, we can't say. There has been speculation throughout the course of the last year that he was going to throw down his hand in the summertime and then sometime before Labor Day, and then sometime immediately after the election, and now, of course, we're into 2019. I think it has to happen for a whole host of reasons before we get deep into primary season. We're already there, so the question is not whether we're in primary season, but how far into it we go. And obviously this has enormous implications, not only for the Republican ticket, but for the country as a whole, the sitting government, and how we understand the actions of the chief executive with regard to our fundamental security and the security of our allies. So these are weighty questions indeed, and the sooner that we can get to hard information, the better. And just one more thing, you know, one more log to add to the fire. Watergate journalist Carl Bernstein was speculating, and he said he wasn't speculating, he was operating on the basis of sources that he has, that Mr. Mueller has recordings of the president actually speaking about policy with Russian operatives. And if that's the case, that is the smoking gun that not any, practically no one believed would actually exist. But of course, right now, it's all speculation and hearsay until we actually have Mr. Mueller's report.
That's the key. I mean, until we have it, as far as I'm concerned, it's hearsay. If Mueller's going to come out, you know, do a prime time, I don't care. We want to hear it in a definitive fashion, as far as I'm concerned. Now, one more thing before we let you go. I know it's been a little bit under the radar with all this other stuff, but the president on Sunday had threatened that the U.S. would devastate Turkey economically. I'm kind of quoting here. If it attacks the Kurdish fighters in Syria who fought with U.S. forces there against ISIS after the U.S. pulls out. So Turkey kind of views some of these Kurdish groups in the region as terrorist organizations, including the Kurds who are fighting with the U.S. And it's feared that Turkey might attack them after the forces leave in the Syrian withdrawal, David, that Trump announced last month. So, you know, to me, it's interesting. You know, you have the pulling out of these troops. Bolton last week demanding a guarantee to be given. John Bolton, the national security advisor, to be given a guarantee for the safety of the Kurdish fighters in Syria before the U.S. withdraws its troops. So you have a little back and forth here. You can kind of see a little disconnect between Bolton and Trump regarding this. But this whole thing with the Kurds coming into play in Syria right now.
Absolutely. I mean, the Turkish government under President Erdogan has long claimed that the Kurdish forces, both their political and their military arms, are terrorist organizations. There have been government attacks on Kurdish facilities, which are by and large in the far eastern, southeastern edge of Turkey. For years now, there is not, that I'm aware of, current hostility underway, but that's been an off and on thing for well over a decade at this point. And there is a real question about how the United States continues to get allies to take up arms on causes that matter to us if we're unable to protect them when we leave the field. So there are strong national interests, not only with regard to the Kurds right now, and by the way, the president of Turkey would argue that the Kurds have committed terrorist acts in the western portions of Turkey, in Istanbul and elsewhere. So this is not just one story in a clear good guy, bad guy kind of situation. But plainly, there is distance between Mr. Bolton and the president, and it's very unclear right now how it is that the president would bring down wreck and ruin on the Turkish economy. It's a threat right now with no mechanism argued. There's a lot the United States could do with regard to currency manipulation, cutting off business contracts, et cetera. But remember that Turkey is our primary ally, a problematic ally to be sure, but our primary ally in the eastern Mediterranean, often rumored, although right now this is very much on ice, for European Union membership. Their weapons are currently interoperable with ours, although they're likely to be buying Russian weapons. Do you really want to push them straight into the arms of Moscow? There's a real question geopolitically, as well as our bilateral relationships, and about exactly what the president's word means. If we look at the Syria pullout right now, it looks very different 3 weeks after the announcement by tweet than it did in that first few hours.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I know their president, the Turkish president, actually blasted Bolton, David, last week, demanding a guarantee be given for the safety of the Kurdish fighters in Syria before the U.S. Withdraws its troops. So you got a little back and forth here, a little bit under the radar with all this other stuff, but it'll be interesting to see how this indeed plays out. We got to get you ready for 9 o'clock. Can't thank you enough for a couple of minutes and a shift in the appearance, and we'll talk to you soon. How's that?
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Jay.